Pure Dog Talk is the voice of purebred dogs. We talk to the legends of the sport and give you the tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I'm your host, Laura Reeves, and we are back today with Dr. Marty Greer, who is our veterinary voice specialist. And Marty's going to be talking to us today about leptospirosis. And this particular disease in dogs has been seeing a bit of a resurgence. Is that right, Marty?
That is right. Back in the 70s and 80s, when it was first really known about in dogs, and then for many years, people really didn't think that it was much of a problem in dogs. Although we were still vaccinating for two strains of it, people didn't take it too seriously. But lately, there really has been an increase in the number of cases, and there's a lot of discussion as to why that happened, but it's really happening in our practice as well.
So I've seen reports of this various parts of the country. Does it seem to be somewhat regional, or does it seem to be more a situation of what people are doing with their dogs, where they're interacting with their dogs?
It's really thought to be regional. The really dry parts of the country, Arizona, Utah, places like that, where there's very little standing water, it doesn't seem to be as much of a problem. It's a problem where it's wet, particularly where it's wet and warm. But even in Wisconsin, we see enough of it when there's standing water. And if there's going to be an outbreak, it tends to be about 18 months after there was really high water. So if there was flooding in an area, and even just along waterways, it doesn't have to be major flooding like a hurricane. Along major waterways where there's been flooding, it shows up about 18 months after that.
Interesting. So for maybe people who aren't as aware, what is leptospirosis? And let's do some real basics on it, and then we can move forward into prevention and treatment and all that.
Sure. And a lot of people know it by lepto. The full name is leptospirosis. And it's a spirochete bacteria. So in some ways, it's similar to Lyme disease. That's also a spirochete bacteria. So people might be able to kind of understand that a little bit better. So a spirochete bacteria is one, instead of it being a straight rod or a little dot like a cocci, it's a spiral. So it looks like a little corkscrew under the microscope. And it has some pretty nasty characteristics in the ability to penetrate tissues because of that corkscrew shape. It can drive its way into tissues where certain other bacteria wouldn't go. So it's a bacterial infection. It's rarely seen in the cat, more commonly seen in wildlife, livestock, and then dogs because of the wildlife and livestock exposures. So it tends to invade into the body through mucous membranes, meaning the eye, the mouth, or cut skin. There's a cut on the foot pad or other areas. Dogs go up first thing in the morning, and what do? They run out to the yard, they go potty, and then they roll around in the wet grass, and they lick all the things they possibly could lick and expose themselves to everything that they possibly could to make you totally insane.
Yes.
So that's where the wildlife has been in your yard overnight, as they wander in, and who knows what comes up in the yard at night, raccoons and possum and deer and vole and all kinds of things. And so people that live in the city say, oh, well, you know, I don't have a problem with lepto. My dog lives in town. Well, I don't know about you, but most people's neighborhoods in my place, raccoons and voles and possum and deer are in town too. I mean, you can open your door and see deer standing in the yard sometimes, even in small cities. In fact, in Milwaukee, they have them. It happens there. So that tends to be how it's spread. And the livestock and the wildlife are the hosts for it in the wild. And then it comes into our small animal populations, our dogs, by that exposure.
And that's a really great point that you were just making, because traditionally or typically or historically, we have thought of lepto as something that hunting dogs encounter, and that Fifi the Maltese in its front yard probably doesn't have the exposure. But what you're saying is that, yes, Fifi does. And it's not just Rex the bird dog that's out there encountering it.
Exactly. And we'll talk about vaccination in more detail, but that's why everybody needs to be concerned about it. The last fatal case of it that we had was a little old Cocker Spaniel that belonged to a little old lady who literally opened the back door. The dog went out, went potty, came back in the house, and that was it. So this was not a dog that had anything that would have remotely considered to be an exposure in most people's relationship that they think they have in either swimming in contaminated water or being the hunting dog, the large breed that's out in the field.
Right. So my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, primarily we see lepto affecting dogs in the liver. So is that accurate, or what are we going to look for as symptoms if our dog could be experiencing an encounter with lepto?
It actually exposes both the liver and the kidney. And okay. The way that it's shed from wildlife and livestock into the dog population is through the urine. So it harbors in the kidney, and that's where it becomes a carrier state, is that the spirochetes will continue to live in the kidney for extended periods of time if the dog is inappropriately treated. So one of the strains is called icterohemorrhagica. Ictero means jaundice, and hemorrhagica means bleeding. So we can see bleeding disorders, we can see liver disorders, but we frequently see it in the kidney. And one of the most common symptoms in the dog is increased water consumption, increased urination, and then a low specific gravity and a high BUN and creatinine on the blood test. So we start thinking about lepto with any patient that comes in that looks like it might be a kidney problem, particularly if they also have a liver problem at the same time. So if we start to see liver and kidney involvement with the same disease, lepto should be jumping to the top of the list fairly quickly as one of the things that should be tested and treated for.
Very good. So I know with vaccine protocols and with minimal vaccines, and we're trying to take care of our dogs by not over-vaccinating, are we running into then a problem on the other end?
I think we are. And since 2002 in our practice, so for 16 years, we've been fans of the three-year protocol for distemper and parvo, so the DAPP part of the vaccine. But the lepto portion, we have continued to encourage our clients to vaccinate for. So lepto, Lyme disease, and Bordetella are the three Bacterins that we typically vaccinate for. Those are vaccines made for bacterial diseases. If you look at distemper, adenopara, influenza, and parvo, those are viruses. The three-year viruses last longer in the dog system. The one-year bacterial diseases, we're still vaccinating annually. We still recommend it annually. And the peak times that we see lepto are spring and fall in the practice. So we try to vaccinate at a time of the year that makes the most sense. If we are working with clients that are reluctant to vaccinate too frequently, and we're absolutely on board with that. So I don't want to sound like I'm a vaccine pusher, because I have been a fan, like I said, since 2002, and that was well before a lot of people were really comfortable with the three-year protocols. But this we've continued to encourage, and we do have some practices around us that say, oh, lepto doesn't happen. Well, if you don't test for it, you don't know your patients have it. So it does have to be something that's on your radar whenever a patient comes in with symptoms. And we should talk about symptoms, because I think that it helps people to kind of understand what they should be looking for. But the vaccine has become much safer and much more effective than it has in years past. So if you're talking about the vaccines that were on the market 10 and 15 years ago, agreed, they were not as safe as they should be. They've absolutely cleaned up the vaccines. The vaccine manufacturers have been very aware of people's reluctance to vaccinate frequently. So they've gone in and they've made their vaccines less antigenic, less likely to cause an allergic reaction. If you had a dog that had a vaccination reaction, it was almost always to lepto or corona in the vaccine. It was rarely distemper or parvo that caused the allergic reaction. It was almost always either coronavirus or leptospirosis. So the vaccine manufacturers are sensitive to the needs of the consumer, and they have improved the quality of the vaccines. They've also included two more serovars. So we used to only vaccinate for two serovars, but we now can vaccinate for four, and that's what we've been doing in our practice since that product came to market. And I think we get really good protection. Very few of the dogs that we see in our practice that are sick with lepto were unvaccinated or undervaccinated for lepto.
Okay, so that's really good what you were just talking about, the serovars, because that had obviously been part of the discussion, is that the leptospirosis bacteria has different, and you can help me understand or explain what a serovar is, different strains, I guess, and that the vaccines weren't touching them all. So you're saying now there is a vaccine that addresses a great number of the serovars, the strains of this bacteria. Is that correct?
Yeah, it probably doesn't cover all of them. There is probably more than 20 serovars, and strain is a good description of that. So there are probably more than 20 serovars that we can see causing disease in the dog. The ones that we can vaccinate for are Canicola, Grippotyphosa, Icterohemorrhagica, and Pomona, which just sound like blah, blah, blah. Some people think that things like Bratislava, that's another strain, may affect dogs, but it's not in the vaccine. So we vaccinate for what we can vaccinate for. And like I said, the vaccine companies have done a really nice job of making them less likely to cause an allergic reaction. So people in the past that have been reluctant to vaccinate should probably revisit this with their veterinarian and talk about whether this is appropriate. According to the Banfield numbers, the dogs that have the most vaccine reactions are the small breed dogs, the Yorkies, the pugs, I think are the top two on their vaccine reaction list. But those are not dogs that are 100% safe from getting exposed to lepto. So the vaccination is still important, even in those dogs. The vaccine manufacturers tell us that the fewer times we put a needle in a dog, the fewer reactions we're going to have. So I encourage people to use the combination with the distemper, parvo, and the lepto all in one vaccine dose if their dog is due for all at the same time. And if people are reluctant to do too many vaccinations at the same time, then we pull rabies, Lyme disease, some of those others out of the vaccination for the same day and have people come back on a separate day so that they're not bombarding their dog with too many serovars and too many vaccines, but still getting them full protection. In our practice, what we work out with our clients is that they can come back within 2 to 3 weeks and get a booster with a technician and not have to pay another office visit. The last thing I want people to think is that veterinarians are trying to just take their money by figuring out ways to get them more often or figuring out ways to put things into their dogs that aren't appropriate. So I want clients to feel really comfortable with the fact that this is a real disease that we see and test for frequently. There isn't probably a week that goes by that we don't check at least one dog in our practice for lepto. It's that common that we really do have this on our radar. And now, like I said, if you live in the mountains in Utah and there's nothing but desert around you, you're probably okay. In fact, a couple of years ago, there was an outbreak of leptospirosis in humans in New York City because of the rats in the apartment complexes. So it's a zoonotic disease. This isn't just about your dog. This is about your human health as well, especially the health of children. Kids are especially susceptible to leptospirosis.
Very, very good. So now we should go back and touch on the symptoms. So what specific symptoms, if you see these are red flags that you need to double check.
Right. And we can see anything from an asymptomatic dog all the way to dogs that are really critically ill. In fact, a couple of years ago, we had two dogs that came to the practice for heartworm tests, and we were running mini panels on them. So we were checking their BUN, creatinine, liver enzymes, and we found two dogs in the same household, a Yorkie and a Beagle, that both had elevated BUNs. So I went back, pulled the blood, sent it to the lab, and found out they really did have a lepto exposure and were completely asymptomatic. We called them, they got antibiotics, and the dogs lived long, normal, healthy lives. And I don't think the owners ever realized how fortunate they were that when they came in at the time that they did opt in for that mini panel so that we could do the organ function testing at that visit. So those dogs did great. They had no symptoms at all. I'm sure the owners thought we were a little crazy. But when you get high liver enzymes and high kidney values on the same blood test, then you do need to start thinking about this. So it can be anything from asymptomatic to a dog with a fever. They're lethargic, they're drinking a lot, they're urinating a lot, they're perhaps having vomiting and or diarrhea. They may or may not be jaundiced, which is when the color of the mucous membranes, the gums, instead of being pink, turns to a yellow or their eyes turn yellow. They can have a lower appetite. They can act stiff and painful. They can also have a cough, which is a little bit confusing. Not many people think of leptospirosis as being one of the things that can cause cough like kennel cough. But it's actually on the list as well because it can cause some bleeding in the lungs or some pneumonia-type symptoms. So it is a consideration when you have a dog that's sick. The problem with this list of fever, lethargy, increased water consumption, vomiting, diarrhea, it sounds like everything that your dog has. It sounds like they ate a sock.
That's what I was just going to say. Like, and how do we know it's this versus 20 other things it could be?
Exactly. Did your dog eat something in the garbage can? Did your dog go out and get exposed to kennel cough at the park? So that's the problem, is that it can look like a lot of things. So when you go into the clinic and your dog is ill and your veterinarian says, well, let's run a chemistry panel and a CBC, this is one of the things that they may be picking up on. Now, a chemistry panel and CBC isn't going to say this dog has lepto. There's additional testing to do to verify that. But it starts them down the right path of saying, oh, my goodness, look, your dog's liver enzymes are high. The BUN's starting to creep up. The urine is too dilute. There's something not right here. These are the things we should be checking for next. And then there's two tests that can be done to check for lepto. One is a DNA test, which actually looks for the DNA of the bacterial organism in the urine. It has to be done in the urine. It has to be done when the dog is acutely sick, not 3 weeks later. And it has to be done before the first dose of antibiotics are given. So lots of times when you go in, part of the CBC chemistry panel that your dog has ordered on it will also include a urinalysis. And more veterinary clinics are including that because we realize the value of it. And because there's some new in-house testing that these urinalyses can be run on computers, so the technicians are no longer having to run them manually. They can be done automated in the hospital. The part we like about it best is that at 7:45 at night, when I say to my staff, we need to run all this blood work on this urine sample, they can pop it in the computer, go off, do something else, come back, have a result by 8 o'clock. So very quickly, we can run these tests in-house to determine if additional testing for lepto should be done. So the one test is a DNA test to look for the actual organism, and the other test is a blood test that determines the titer or how high the dog's reaction to lepto is. It's reported out as 1 to 100, 1 to 200, 1 to 400, and so on. So at 1 to 100, it's considered to be a negative test. When they get above 1 to 800, then that's considered to be positive. The confusion with this titer is that this titer is done to look for disease. Other titers like distemper and parvo look for immunity provided by the vaccine so that you know you don't have to vaccinate for it. So I have clients that come in and say, well, I want you to titer my dog for lepto so you don't have to booster them. And that's not how this test works. So it gets a little muddied here when clients are talking about titers, and I want them to really understand it. And if they have more questions, they may need to do a little bit of reading online or call and talk to their veterinarian to really fully understand the differences. But this titer is to actually determine exposure to the disease, not quality of the vaccination response.
Right. That is very, very good. And I've not heard that information before. So good information for people to have and different than what they may be thinking it is. So treatment, if we go through all this and we say, yes, our dog is positive for this particular bacteria, how are we going to then be able to treat it?
It depends on the severity of the disease. Sometimes we'll go as far as ultrasounding to determine how much liver involvement or kidney involvement there is. Treatment may include nothing more than just a course of antibiotics at home. Either amoxicillin or doxycycline are considered appropriate treatments for antibiotics. Doxycycline will eliminate the carrier state in the kidney, so the dog won't continue to shed leptospirosis for years and years in their urine. So we may with a course of amoxicillin for 2 weeks and then follow it with doxycycline for an additional 2 weeks to get rid of the carrier state. You know, doxycycline is a great drug, but if the dog is already vomiting, it can cause enough stomach upset that it may not be an appropriate first antibiotic to use. It also doesn't come in an injectable form. So if the dog is really sick, we're probably going to hospitalize them, start them on injectable antibiotics, put them on IV fluids, and then any other supportive care they might need. So if they're vomiting, they may need injections for vomiting. They're certainly going to need IV fluids if their BUN and creatinine and liver enzymes are high enough that they need IV fluid support. So it depends a lot on the severity. If the dog is just moderately ill and keeping food down, we may send home a bottle of antibiotics and then have them come back for some follow-up care at the hospital to make sure that they've responded well. But if they're really sick, they're going to be in the hospital on IV fluids. And the other important thing to know from a treatment standpoint is prior to the onset of treatment, the dog is shedding lepto in their urine. And like I said a few minutes ago, it is a zoonotic disease, meaning that it can affect humans. So kennel staff, hospital staff, they're going to be wearing gloves, taking care of the patient, cleaning up the urine. And owners at home should consider that as well. If their dogs are having accidents, which they frequently do with lepto because it forces them to drink more water and urinate more because of the disease, they may have accidents in the house even though they're a well housebroken dog. So when you're cleaning up the house in the areas that the dog has urinated, gloves are appropriate and you need to keep your children or anybody else that's immunocompromised away from the urine or any other body fluids. So anybody on chemotherapy, that's on steroids for any kind of an immune-mediated disease, an elderly person, a small child, any of those need to be kept away from the urine. Well, then you go, well, gee, little kids crawl through the places on the floor that the dog might urinate. So you do have to be especially careful with children in the house with a dog that might be a lepto suspect. So it's important that that's made aware to the client.
Right. I'm just thinking about when you have more than one dog. Like if you've got a house full of dogs or a kennel full of dogs and you have one that is carrying lepto and you didn't know it or what have you, you need to be aware of that and check the rest of the dogs. What are we going to do then?
Yeah, frequently that is what we do. If we have one dog that comes in that we have a suspicion of or have proven that it has lepto, we very likely will be either testing everyone in the house or we may just go ahead and treat everybody. And I have had to do that in a small number of households because I have clients, like you know people, that they have 5 or 10 dogs.
Yeah.
So you're not going to have the other 9 dogs in the household say, well, too bad, you're going out in the yard, but this dog is urinating, so take your chances. So you are probably going to do that. And we do encourage people, if they do have a lepto dog, to try and have it urinating in a different part of the yard if you know about it. Now, of course, by the time you have a diagnosis, there may have already been exposure to the other dogs. And then the question comes in, well, how did one dog get it, not all the dogs, and what was the exposure, and, you know, what do we do next? So it can be complicated when you have multiple dogs in the household or dogs that are going to a dog park or a boarding kennel, a doggy daycare, any of the places that there are large concentrations of dogs. So especially in those situations, I would definitely encourage people to have lepto vaccinations along with the other contagious diseases that we see, parvo, influenza, bordetella. So there's certainly a group of dogs that are at increased risk of exposure, so probably should have their vaccine protocols reevaluated in light of that. Now, the other thing that's really cool is the American Animal Hospital Association, AHA, has a little part on their website. If you go in and type in AHA vaccination guidelines, I don't know if you've seen this, but there's a vaccine calculator. It'll go through, it's a little side tab on the left side of the website, and it goes through and it asks you questions about your dog's lifestyle. So do they go to the doggy daycare? Do they go to dog parks? Do they go to shows? What are their exposures? And these guidelines were just updated in February. So for people that haven't recently reviewed these, if you want to have a really in-depth and important conversation with your veterinarian, you should go ahead and review this before you go in. So it's called a lifestyle-based vaccine calculator. It's right on the AHA website, American Animal Hospital Association, updated February 3rd. You don't need to be a veterinarian or veterinary staff member to do this. You can go in, it asks you the age and then other things that are lifestyle questions, and then it'll make recommendations. So if you do this prior to the vaccine appointment for your pet, you take them in, you have this printed out, you can now have a really in-depth and educated conversation with the vet tech or the veterinarian that you're speaking with, and you can make really great decisions about what's appropriate for your dog without having to just feel like they're cramming something down your throat or you don't really understand it or they don't have enough time to explain it. You can review this with them. And I'm really impressed that AHA has gone to the time and trouble of doing this. The difficulty is at the appointment, they may not have an opportunity to go through this whole thing with you, or they may not have a computer in the exam room. So you may take your iPad or you may take the printout and then discuss. And then it lists off the core and non-core vaccines that you may want to consider for your individual dog and their lifestyle.
That is actually really cool. I did not know that, and I am definitely going to be looking that up. And I will make sure there's a link to that on the website. Well, thank you so much, Marty. We sure appreciate your veterinary voice for Pure Dog Talk. Appreciate your time.
Thank you. I love being here.
The Dog Show Superintendents Association is a proud supporter of Pure Dog Talk. Our dog show superintendents are the hardworking people who make the dog show function. They are advocates for education and mentorship in the purebred dog fancy. So stop by the super's desk at your next show. Tell them how much you love Pure Dog Talk and give them a shout out for their support. That's all for today. Thank you for joining us on Pure Dog Talk.